it's crazy. You put three or four people in a rack on a racquetball court, there's a lot of traffic.
Yeah, it's not quite like a bear and a cat mated, but it gets really crazy.
A lot of traffic. There's all sorts of crazy.
There's lots
in that
of traffic.
Situation.
There's lots of traffic. Hey.
Yeah, you keep returning to this point. And frankly, I'm a little concerned. I feel like is this a call for help?
It's a call for something, Matt. It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 190. I am your host, Adam Mandem. Matt and I talked this time about Ziggy Ansah and whether he's the most important player for the Detroit Lions entering the 2015 season. We also talk about Nate Austin's return, as well as another big man, Alan Sampson's, all 7'3" of him, joining the BYU basketball program. It's then on to football, where we set realistic expectations for Bronco, talk about what would have to happen to reach 10 wins, and then what are the keys for BYU running backs to be successful this season. Once again, this is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com and listen to us talk about it right now. Rise and Shout podcast, Matt. Did you watch any of the hockey, the Stanley Cup finals?
I did. I did watch some ice hockey playoffs.
I love ice hockey playoffs. We've discussed this before on the podcast. I think it is, I want to say it's the most exciting of the 7-game series playoffs. Can be. Low scoring, lots of tension. Anyway, good series.
The fun thing about hockey is that it's always on the move, right?
Right.
There's always something going on.
Yeah, it's a kinetic sport. There's always something happening. And unlike the NBA, which I've been watching a lot of NBA playoffs this year, Matt, we're recording it on Wednesday night, Tuesday night, I'm sorry. The game has not been decided yet between Golden State and
technically.
But I'll tell you what the NBA has to do something about is the hack-a-player strategy.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, two nights ago when they were hacking Iguodala, this is just dumb. I mean, I get it. If you're the coach on the other side, it is the right strategy to slow the game down. Got it. But to me, if they randomly push some guy away from the ball in the last, 2 minutes, make it two shots of the ball.
Yeah.
Just
an intentional foul.
Just end it. Let's
call it as an intentional foul because that's exactly what it is.
Yes, and I feel the same way about any intentional fouls on the ball, on the guy with the ball, unless they're making at least a minimal attempt to get the ball. Like, it has to be a basketball play, not I'm going to tackle this guy so he can shoot a free throw.
I'm just going to grab him because he's the guy who can't shoot.
Yeah, and how weird is that Andre Iguodala, career 72% free throw shooter, that's pretty decent free throw shooting. And in this playoffs and this season, he's been horrendous. Got to be something mental, right?
Yeah, maybe is it the stage? Is it the, I don't know.
I mean, it's like Steve Sachs and a few guys in baseball that all of a sudden couldn't throw the ball to first base anymore. You know?
It's crazy.
To know. So, anyway, well, Matt, let's move on from the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs, and move on to some BYU sports related topics. Should we do?
Here
that?
We go. Yeah, I think maybe we should. It's probably about that time.
On a scale of, we have a scale. We know what
we only use is. One scale now.
We only use one
you
scale.
About to throw out numbers? Come on. Now.
I was about to throw out numbers. On that excitement scale, Matt, of Riley Nelson to Ty Detmer, how excited are you for BYU Media Day next week?
I'm leaning towards Ty Detmer excited.
Really? That excited?
Oh, I'm so hungry. I'm hungry for football talk.
Yeah. And cheese curds. You're also hungry for cheese curds.
Cheese curds?
Cheese curds.
That's what I said.
What?
Cheese turds. That's what I said.
Oh my gosh, you're terrible. This reminds me of something, Matt. What it reminds me of, I've got a tweet I'd like to share with you from our friend Jeff Johnston. That's at GoffJBYU. This is what Jeff has to say. You clearly said made it, not mated.
They're just baiting me now. You're baiting me into a fit of uncontrollable laughter and tears. I still think you said made it.
I said mated. M-A-T-E-D.
Okay. Either way, it was a little ridiculous.
It was completely ridiculous. And this is a high bar to clear, Matt. It may be the most ridiculous thing I've ever said on this podcast.
Actually, you know, I thought about that, and I think you may be right. It is way more ridiculous than me talking about cheese turds.
Yes, yes. Cheese curds are delicious. Stop calling them that.
Calling them what? I'm saying the same exact thing you are.
Deep fried cheese curds are basically one of the best foods on the planet. They should be their own food group.
Deep fried cheese turds. That sounds good.
Oh my gosh. I'm moving on. I can't handle you anymore tonight. So that's
hey, you know,
that's
well,
it,
real
everybody.
Quick.
That's the podcast for tonight. We will catch you next time.
Hey, I think it was last time my family came up to visit you.
Yes.
The whole drive through Wisconsin, you know, when we'd stop, I'm going to go inside. Does anybody need anything? Somebody would say, yeah, give me some cheese curds. I'd say, all right, I'll grab some cheese turds. The whole drive, I said it that way, and I refused to acknowledge that I was saying anything different than everybody else. So, I'm pretty immature sometimes.
So what you're saying is we should all just feel bad for your wife and children.
I think, listen, don't y'all already.
You are ridiculous, so we will...
You're ridiculous.
We'll try to move on. We'll try to move on if we can. So, Matt, let's go to our CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
So, our first story we're going to talk about comes from Vanquish the Foe. They had a bit about Grand Canyon University entering the West Coast Conference. Matt, this came from AZ Central asking St. Mary's head coach Randy Bennett about the possibility of an addition to the West Coast Conference in the near future. And the Grand Canyon University Antelopes. That is, I did not make up the mascot.
Really?
So this is the quote from Randy Bennett. They'd be a good fit for our league and a good media market for our league to be in. So I think it's only a matter of time. They need to fight through these years. And then when they are eligible for the postseason as far as NIT and NCAA, then I think it's going to happen. Matt, reaction to Grand Canyon University potentially joining the West Coast Conference.
Really? Really? I mean, they're like just barely a D1 school now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, this just seems like a bad idea. I mean, is it the TV market? Do you think you really get a big upside in the Arizona TV market by picking up Grand Canyon University? It's the same theory that got the Big Ten all excited about Rutgers and the New York TV market, but on a much smaller scale.
New York.
In reality, it just doesn't play out that way.
New York, New Jersey TV market. Huh?
Oh, right. Two TV markets that Rutgers does not control in any way.
So how many people in the Phoenix market care at all about Grand Canyon University?
Well, I'd have to look at the roster and see how many of the players' families are from the area.
Yes. The other piece to this is, they're going to watch the games on what? The WTV? The WCC channel? I mean, if Grand Canyon joined, the only time they'd be on TV potentially nationally is if they were playing Gonzaga, BYU, maybe St. Mary's. Otherwise, TV market's irrelevant because they're not going to be on TV.
Now, is it a recruiting help to say, well, we're going to come and play, you know, you come... We'll come play a game in Arizona, you know, a couple times a year or whatever. Your family's gonna be able to see you play.
I don't think so. I not in basketball. You only have to recruit. You only have to have 12, 15 guys on the roster at a time. This isn't football. I just don't see. And they did a good job at Vanquish the Foe, basically saying that this Grand Canyon University doesn't add anything for BYU. You know, now
definitely no. I don't think they bring anything to the table for anybody.
And on the other side, probably doesn't add anything. Their biggest point, which is great, is right now the WCC is at 10 teams, so that makes things really easy. If you have an 11-team conference, Well, what do you do? How many conference games per season? Unbalanced schedules? Or are you forced to really expand to 12 teams? My guess is they would expand to 12. But if Grand Canyon or similar schools are the option, then just stay at 10.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway.
But what's even the motivation for expanding, for grabbing another team? I don't understand. Where does this even come from?
I don't know. Unless it's a team that really brings something, there's no reason to do it. Next story, Matt. This is from the DetroitSportsNation.com. They named Ziggy Ansah as Detroit's most important player going into this season. Matt, let me read a little bit from this story. Basically, they talked about losing Nadekum Suh and Nick Fairley, and then all the stuff comes back to this defense, if they're going to be anything, is going to have big play from Ziggy Ansah, as well as they did mention they need some development from Kyle Vanoy and a few other players on the team. And, of course, they got Haloti Ngata as well. So there's some talent coming in. What do you make of this? Could this be a big, huge breakout year? I mean, Ziggy's already had a decent few years, but is this the year where he breaks out?
Oh yeah, I think this is, if he's going to break out, this is the year that it happens, right?
Right.
Everything's placed on his shoulders. He's had a little bit of time to get his feet under him. If he's going to do it, this is the season that it happens.
Yep.
And you know, when you hear him talk about things like, I want to be the best, I want to be the best at what I do in the league. And so I think he's clearly got the right mindset. I think he's definitely got the right physical skills. You know, he's got the athleticism and all of those things. And it's just going to be about bringing that all together, and making this into a campaign to remember.
Right, right. And he's got, over his career now, two seasons, 15.5 sacks, 8 in 2013, 7.5 last season. You know, to become one of those elite guys, you're in the double digits of sacks, right, at least. But the good news is there are other playmakers, so he doesn't have to do it all by himself. So there'll be some other good players on the team.
Wouldn't it be killer to see the combo, the Ziggy Vanoy combo, like the way it played out at BYU, where they kind of freed stuff up for each other?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Wouldn't that be awesome to see that in the NFL?
It would be a great story if the two of them can do similarly how they did before. Matt, a couple of basketball pieces before we move into current college football players. Nate Austin is coming back officially, though they didn't mention anything about a scholarship. Your reaction to Nate Austin getting a hardship waiver and returning for the 2015-2016 men's basketball season?
I think it's great. I think what we saw last year is that we need him. I think we still need him. Who knows how the scholarship situation pans out for him. But it's always good to see a guy that's played a good role on a team get a chance to keep doing that after a season was cut short.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, he'll factor into the rotation next year for sure. I've seen a few on Cougar Board and a few other places, people suggesting a 3-big-man lineup that could have a starting lineup of him, Kafusi, and Eights. I don't see that, Matt. I see 3 wings and either one of those 3 big guys probably – Kafusi coming off the bench. Do you think we could have that drastic of a change, because we'll be a lot deeper in the interior part of the team, that we might see a starting lineup with 3 big guys in it?
Wouldn't that be crazy?
It'd be a definite change from last year.
Oh, it would be such a stark contrast from last year. And I think that could be a lot of fun. I think we're going to get a little bit ahead of yourself, I feel like, just because of what we saw last year. But, that would be very interesting transition for the program.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. You may have stretches in a game where 3 of those big guys are on the floor together. I think the bulk of the minutes is going to be 3 wing players and 2 interior players, because the strength the true strength of the team is still on the perimeter. You know, Fisher, Collinsworth are a given to be, I think, the starters and get a bulk of the minutes on the outside. But as we've talked about in previous podcasts, there's a bunch of other perimeter players that will be vying for those other spots, and I think they're going to be good. So we shall see. Someone who won't be vying for one of those perimeter spots, Matt, is 7'3" walk-on Alan Hampson. So Hampson is, as probably many of our listeners know, the brother, not the sister.
Hello.
BYU All-American Jennifer Hampson, who of course plays for the Los Angeles Sparks of the WNBA and was famous at BYU for playing both women's volleyball and women's basketball. So Matt, we have a tweet bag question on this, so I will refer us to the tweet bag. That's Andre Hutchins, that's at @AC_Hutchins. Two words, he says, Alan Hampson. Please discuss any chance he'll actually be able to offer significant contributions to the Cougs. Matt, chance we see Alan Hampson play regularly in the 2015-2016 season?
Ooh, 2015-2016 season?
Yes, let's start there. 0%, I'll make it easy. He will not see meaningful
minutes. Yeah. I was going to say like 9. I was going to give him a shot.
I'm not giving him a shot. There's too many big guys, and he's coming off his mission. He didn't play a lot of basketball before his mission due to a back injury. This guy is a project. I mean, he's 7'3". He makes me, when I was his age, 20 years old, look like a muscle guy.
What are they saying he weighs in at?
I think somebody said 75 pounds, but I did see he had been listed in high school. Granted, in high school, they say he was only 7 feet at like 145 or something.
Wow.
I mean, that if that's true, I mean, I've seen some pictures of him in video from high school. He was a small dude. Like, he was thin. Obviously, height would
like
be his
like
thin.
Manute Bol?
More Sean Bradley, probably, than Manute Bol.
Okay.
So, you know, whatever that's... Okay.
But the whole story is crazy, right? I mean, he's 7 foot playing at Pleasant Grove. He's got the scoliosis. They do the surgery. He comes out of there 7'3", right? Because they fix his back up.
Right.
And, I mean, I can only imagine how the difficulty
wait,
that causes.
Wait a
right?
second. Did they do that for me? I'd be 6 feet, man.
I'm not sure it really works that way.
No.
But yeah, I mean, it's a project, right?
Right.
And this is where he wants to go to school. What really strikes me is, I mean, he's getting back from his mission and start school the next, like, 4 or 5 days later. Can you imagine how awkward he's going to be?
especially at 7'3".
Oh,
that's
man.
Awkward. I mean, percent chance that he actually contributes at BYU at some point? I don't know. 25-30% chance?
I feel like it really could go either way. I feel really up in the air here. I almost want to just say 50-50. I mean, you just don't know.
You don't know. And 7'3", you can't teach height, right?
Right.
I mean, could he become just a guy that blocks a lot of shots, plays some decent defense? I mean, that there's room for that on a roster, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you got a rotation of 9 or 10 guys, you can have a specialist like that playing limited minutes. I mean, but his lack of size width-wise would make me really hesitant that anything's going to happen, at least in the short term.
Well, what they ought to do is get him in the weight room with the strength and conditioning coach from the football team.
Right, right.
Seriously, though, you look at like what they've done with some of the football players. Get him in there, put him on a diet, you know, have him moving some things around, and you know, maybe he puts a little bit of weight on.
Yes.
I mean, he clearly comes from a very athletic family, you know?
Yes. I mean, his sister proved with her, you know, obviously very, very tall, but very athletic. I've heard a few people mention who have seen him play in high school that he was pretty athletic. You know, he was not as awkward as maybe a kid that size can sometimes be without much size with him. So, Interesting story to track, but I think we're both in agreement. Not much chance that it's going to affect this next season.
No, I think it's at least one more season before you know what you've got here.
Yeah, yeah. So Matt, let's move on to football, okay? And as a reminder, of course, we are the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Go to CougarFan.com for all of your BYU sports news needs. Now, Matt, football, let's go to an article on Lawless Republic about fair expectations for Bronco, okay? So I'm going to go down their list. They've got a couple of expectations they really want to see. Discipline, so less penalties is kind of what it boils down to. Defense, get a better defense, especially with him making the play calls. Victories, okay, more victories. And then better play calling up and down both the offensive and defensive side of the ball. Matt, what are these the right criteria? What, I mean, if you were running the program, if you were Tom Homo for a day, what are the criteria you are judging Bronco Mendenhall in the 2015 season?
Wins. Just win, baby. You know, some of this stuff, discipline, yeah, I see that. But when you talk to Bronco, you know, the aggressive penalties he's not real fired up about, I can get over. Wins will cover up a multitude of sins, right? So the penalties I can get over. Defense, I think, plays into wins. And play calling is something is so easy to take shots at. I mean, even I take shots at Coach and I play calling, right? It's really easy to take shots at the play calling as leading to a team underperforming or not being competitive, right? Play calling is a very easy thing to blame all of that on. But at the end of the day, I think what you have to look at is wins. Are they winning games? And that's, for me, that is the measuring stick. Just win games. I don't care if they're close games. I don't care if they're shootouts. I don't care if you lead the nation in penalties. Win games.
Yeah, Greg Rebell pointed out a lot last year in tweets and even on this podcast that there isn't much correlation between winning and penalties. It's not what you think it is. The teams that win and the teams that are the terrible teams, penalties aren't necessarily the driver in that. Okay, so I'm with you on the discipline part. To me, victories, of course, is it. What I want to see, and I think it's fair, is the defense. He is a defensive coach, right? I don't really expect him to mastermind the offense, right? That's a nice job. The play calling, Mendenhall's not going to affect a nice play calling, I think, very much, right? What I want to see is this defense has got to get better. Last year, if we had had a good defense, an above-average defense, which we've had almost every year that Mendenhall has been the coach, we could have eked out some of those games that we lost while Christian Stewart was figuring out how to run the offense. Mm-hmm. And then last season becomes a 10-3 season, and then you look at last year differently. Yeah, you're disappointed because Hill got hurt, and you know you end up losing three games and all that stuff. But do you look at the season totally different, right? If it was 10-3, you take a couple of those losses away, you know, all of a sudden, a lot of the apprehensions people have about this upcoming season are very, very different. And that's the difference to me. The defense has to be good. Otherwise, those, to your point before about the wins are not going to be there.
Right, but even at the same time, right, if it just looking at what we're talking about here, if the penalties come down, we lose more than five games, but they're low-scoring games, and you know, and I have a hard time, you know, losing more than five games and saying that the play calling would be decent. But let's just say that we all feel better about what Anai is doing with the offense. We feel like we actually, it looks more like a finished product now, and we feel good about that, but we only win seven games. That's not good.
No, absolutely. But I don't think, if what you said is true about the offense, we win more than seven games.
Oh, I absolutely agree. But I'm just belaboring the point, I guess, that at the end of the day, I think the you want this to be a memorable season. You want this to be something special. You got to win 9, 10 plus games.
So in a similar vein, at KSL.com, Dylan Cannon had a piece about four reasons why BYU will win 10 games in 2015. So the four reasons he lists, Matt, are Taysom Hill, which we talked about in the last couple of podcasts, and his health. Defense will be better. Big-name teams may not be that great. And so, translation, the schedule might not be as hard as it looks as on paper. And then the Cougars are loaded on offense. Do you agree, more to the point, do you disagree with any of his points?
No, I don't disagree with any of his points. And I think that the thing about big-name teams not being as great as they have been in years past, that's a very interesting point. Because I think if you win those games, you beat Nebraska, you beat Michigan, those are the two examples in here, you're going to get credit for beating Nebraska and beating Michigan in Ann Arbor, even if they're not very good.
Right. Or Nebraska in Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough, I see where he's going, and I actually agree with him. But the one that I struggle with a little bit is I keep hearing we're loaded on offense. I'm not sure we're loaded, okay? We have a great quarterback coming back who showed a lot of great signs last year in the passing game, and we already know he's one of the best runners BYU has ever had. The wide receiver core, I'm not totally sold on that we are loaded there. Mitch Matthews obviously is the cream of that crop, but I think I hear phrases like out of his article, the wide receiver position is arguably the deepest and most talented group in the Mendenhall era. I don't think going into the year you can actually make that argument.
No, it's too early to sell that, right? I mean, it's
who there has proven themselves besides
exactly
Mitch Matthews?
Exactly.
No one. Nobody. So, I mean, I believe there's a lot of talent there. I think Kurtz will be great. I think Juergens may become more of a factor. Obviously Blackman and some of the other younger players may take that leap. But sometimes they don't. And the other piece is, we're not loaded at running back. If Williams goes down again,
we're in real trouble.
Yeah, there's not enough talent back there to endure that. There are good players to be your second, third, or fourth best running back, but I don't think it translates going upwards.
And one of the things that they're missing here in this piece of the conversation, something that's often overlooked when you talk about, how good is this offense going to be, is the play of the offensive line.
Right.
What's going to happen there? Is the culture going to continue to evolve where we've got a mean, nasty offensive lineman at BYU, the type of stuff that 2J was really brought here to instill? Does that continue to evolve this year or not? And I think that's a huge piece of answering the question of whether or not the offense is really loaded or Taysom Hill is really going to be able to perform to what he is capable of. Or even you talk about Jamal Williams. The play of the offensive line there is absolutely key.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. The offense will be, if it becomes elite, the factor that you're pointing out is probably the factor that has to be there. The offensive line probably has to become elite.
Mm-hmm.
And that will make everybody better. Make the running backs better. It certainly will allow Taysom Hill to sit back in the pocket and maybe take his time. Which, during his career, the offensive line was better last year, but during many of his snaps, that has not been the case.
Right.
So, Matt, one last article on the offense related very closely to what we were just talking from. This came out of the Deseret News by Leif Pivler. He talks about the running backs and how this could be a record-breaking year, particularly for Jamal Williams. Last year was maybe supposed to be that year, but obviously Williams was hurt. But he's only 930 yards shy of breaking Harvey Unga's all-time rushing record. Matt, both of us predicted last year, if I'm remembering this right, that Jamal Williams would break Harvey Unga's record last year, that he was going to have this monster 1,500-yard season. Where do we put him now? How comfortable do you feel predicting that Williams will break Unga's record?
I think, we look at this, he's got a, he's got to average 71.5 yards per game to get there. I feel pretty comfortable if he plays every game.
Right.
You know, if there's an issue where he's got to sit out against Nebraska or there's an injury, I think it becomes a lot harder to do if he loses a game or two. But 930 yards for somebody of his ability is well within reach.
Well, and also when you think of the offense that he's on, right, that has so many more plays per game than, say, your average offense. So I'm with you. It's 930 is certainly doable, but again, that requires health.
And he's going to be a workhorse. I mean, I really think there he's going to get a lot of touches, and that kind of leads to the health issue, right? We talked about this, the phrase injury prone and all that, and I'm not going to get into any of that. But the more you carry the football, statistically speaking, your odds of suffering an injury go up.
Yes.
I think he's going to get a lot of touches. I don't see 930 yards as being untouchable for him.
No, I think it's probable that he makes that. But I do think, like with any running back, there's just that risk of injury. And like we just mentioned, an injury to him, I think, limits this offense a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll really find out if Algie Brown and Nate Carter and Adam Hine can carry the load. I don't want to find that out, though. I'd rather just roll with Jamal for the year.
I am totally fine with that.
Yeah, it would. Again, if we're talking about being an elite offense, Jamal, I think, needs to be part of that formula.
Mm-hmm.
So, Matt, that is kind of our quick version this week. I don't really have a ton else out there. We do have, I think, one more TweetBag question that I should get to before we finish up. Justin Whiting, that's at JN Whiting on Twitter. He asks, what are the chances that Kafusi, Taysom, and Jamal are in the NFL next year? What kind of year would BYU need to have? So, Matt, let's go player by player. We'll start off with over, under, and I'm going to give you a percent chance that the player's in the NFL next year. Does that work?
Yeah.
So, over, under, would you take the over or the under on I'll do it this way. We'll do it by round in the draft. Over means less.
That's tricky.
Less, and under means, sooner in the draft. Okay? So, Bronson Kafusi, undrafted free agent, over or under?
I'm going to take the over.
You're going to take the over. So you, what does that mean?
I think he's a late rounder.
So you're taking the under.
Oh, I'm taking the under.
Yes, you're taking the under.
Woo, good thing we didn't have money on that.
Yeah, good thing.
Of course, I might have been saved because I think you're going to contradict me right here.
Yeah, I'm going to take a push. I think he's an undrafted free agent. So what does he have to show this year to be a late round draft choice?
I don't think he's got to be. I don't think he's got to be Kyle Van Noy.
No, certainly not. Or Ziggy Ansah.
Right, but I think he's got to put together a highlight reel of good, getting to the ball, some serious disrupting of offensive game plans. I think he's got to come just shy of that level though, if he wants to get drafted.
Yeah, I think he has to have a monster season. He needs sacks. He needs tackles for loss. He needs some great athletic plays. I mean, go back to his sophomore year, and I thought he would be a mid NFL round draft choice. But, last year was kind of a rough year. I realized there was the position change. There might be a lot in that. He is a little undersized for an NFL defensive lineman. So he's going to have to show that he can play with and beat those big offensive linemen. And he'll get a chance because we're going to play some offensive lines with NFL caliber offensive linemen he's facing. So let's go on to Taysom Hill, okay?
Mm-hmm.
5.5 rounds of the NFL draft. You're taking the over, which would be 6th round or later, or the under, which would be the 5th round or earlier.
I'm going to take the under.
I'm going to take the over.
Man. I've got big blue goggles on, huh?
Well, here's the thing. You know, Mr. Whiting brings out, what does the team have to do? The team doesn't have to do anything, okay? These guys getting drafted and the team going 7-6 are not necessarily tied to one another, okay? I mean, maybe with Taysom, that's not so true. But if Kaufusi had a monster season, BYU could still go 7-6, right? With Taysom, I mean, he's got to show he can make NFL throws. He does not throw consistently deep and prove that he can do that. That, to me, makes him a flyer, not a quarterback people are going to use a higher round draft choice thinking this guy could be our quarterback in the future.
But you know what I think helps Taysom Hill?
His insane athleticism?
And the quarterback class of 2016. It is not a really deep class.
No, it is not. That's true. You know, that's a factor.
Cardell Jones, I think he's going to be a really attractive candidate. You get much further out of there. You know, some of the names people throw out there are Connor Cook at Michigan State, Hackenberg at Penn State. I know I'm listing all Big Ten guys, right? You get out of there. I mean, you got Jonathan Goff at Cal, Dak Prescott, Mississippi State, maybe. But I think once you get out of that group, I think you got a lot of players really close together at that point. You know, we'll see what Golson does after transferring. But you got a lot of players that are close together at that point, and I believe that gives Taysom Hill an opportunity to get himself out in front of that group. And I think if he has a good season, I think he could make himself a more attractive option than a Connor Cook or a Christian Hackenberg. I think you have a tough time with Cardell Jones.
Yeah.
But I think in the context of the quarterback class he'd be competing against, if there's a team looking to use a pick in those first four or five rounds on a quarterback, I think he's got a shot.
Yeah, and you make some excellent points, which I think is a first for you. Actually, I'm just kidding.
Oh, come on!
I'm just kidding. He has to show, I believe, that he can make those crosses body, you know, deep outs type of throws, those touch throws. Back of the shoulder, you know, he has the athleticism and running ability that most NFL teams are now craving in quarterbacks. You know, they've seen what a Russell Wilson and a Cam Newton and even an Aaron Rodgers with his scrambling ability can do to defenses. This isn't the NFL anymore of the 80s and 90s where you had one or two mobile, elitely mobile quarterbacks, but then everybody else is a bunch of, you know, pocket passers sit in the pocket. You got about a third to a half of the league where their legs are a big part of what they do as a quarterback. And Taysom's got that down pat. But does he have the accuracy on those longer throws that you just have to have in to keep the defense honest at the NFL level? And he has not shown that at BYU yet. I mean, he increased his accuracy last year, and I think that was a genuine improvement. Did I say genuine?
I'm not sure what you're saying.
I'm not sure.
You say all sorts of crazy genuine stuff.
That's true. Sometimes I say that a cat and a bear, they mated.
Oh, jeez.
You know, that's
we're going there again. Cat. We're going there again.
Yeah, they mated. Mated.
Wow.
Do you know who
probably belongs on my list of quarterbacks is Bearcat quarterback Gunnar Kiel.
Yeah, sure. That could be on that list.
I'd take Taysom Hill over him any day of the week.
Well, of course you would, you big blue goggle wearing homer.
Hey, you know what? Let's settle this on the field.
What field?
I guess you and I won't settle on the field. But...
No, that would just end in injury. Matt, I played racquetball for an hour this last weekend.
How'd that work out for you?
I was very sore. I could barely lift my right arm the next day.
Wait. Wow.
I love racquetball, though. It's a lot of fun.
Racquetball's a good game. Took a little bit of racquetball while I was at BYU.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah.
You may remember how I suffered a pretty nasty pair of black eyes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had my wife on head with the racket on Saturday, so that was good.
Oh, that's always a good way to, you know, tap out, you know, top off a weekend.
Yeah, yeah. You know, just whack, you know, whack her on the head with the top of the head with a racket. That's good. We were playing doubles. It gets a little crowded with doubles, but.
Gets crazy. You put three or four people in a rack on a racquetball court. Gets you know, there's a lot of traffic.
Yeah, it's not quite like a bear and a cat mating, but it gets
a lot of traffic. Crazy. There's all sorts of craziness in that.
There's
situation.
Lots of traffic. There's lots of traffic. Hey, you know, you brought up bear cats. No, I did that actually.
You keep returning to this point, and frankly, I'm a little concerned. I feel like I should. Is this a call for help? I feel like that's what this is.
It's a call for something, Matt. I'm not sure that it's a call for help, but it's definitely a call for something. So, Matt, the last player that Mr. Whiting asked, that Justin asked about, is Jamal Williams. So what does he have to show? And let's start this with the over-under. Over and under 6.5 rounds of the NFL draft.
I think I might have to take the over.
I am also taking the over. I don't think he's an, as of today, I don't think he is a draftable NFL level running back.
Yeah,
he's got to show he can stay healthy, and then he's got to show explosiveness. Now, I had felt very differently about him after the end of his sophomore season. I thought he was a mid-round draft pick, but you've got two seasons in there where he just has not looked as good. I mean, he did not look as good last year, 4.8 yards per carry versus 5.7. And I know he was hurt for part of this, and so, but that's part of it. That's how you're getting evaluated. That's the tape, and that's the tape they're going to have to. So to beat our expectations, Matt, don't you think he's going to have just a statistically and on film, a really, really stellar season?
Oh, it's got to be. It's going to have to be a ridiculous season to beat that. You know, it's and I think if I go back to this same type of look, you know, when you look at other running backs that he's going to be compared against, I think he's got a very much an uphill climb to get there against this group, given what he's got available as his body of work. He would have to have, you know, a season for the ages, maybe the best season in BYU football running back history.
Yeah. And you know, Taysom, a healthy Taysom helps him, right? Because that will open up lanes for him. And you know, I think there will be a lot of good, running backs in that draft potentially. Devontae Booker out of Utah being one of them, right?
Ezekiel Elliott out of Ohio State. There's some really talented running backs.
But the thing is, the good things for him, quite honestly, is that there are running back is not typically, you know, we had this with Gurley this year, with Todd Gurley out of Georgia, but running backs are really found nowadays in those mid-rounds. A lot of times the best running backs are found there. And if he does have that kind of stellar season, could I see him sneaking up in the fourth, fifth round and suddenly being the starting running back on a team that first year? Yeah, it's possible. I think the talent is there, but you have to show it. You know, somebody's not going to – third and fourth and fifth round draft choices, those are valuable. Those are NFL starters, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't spend that on a running back project or a running back where you're not quite sure. Most of the teams are spending it on what they think is maybe not a sure thing, because I'm not sure those exist very often, but on something pretty close to a sure thing.
Yeah.
Which I hope he has that kind of year, Matt.
I hope he does too. You know, I hope he has a Luke Staley type of year.
Yep, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. Well, Matt, I don't have anything else. Our agenda has been completed. Do you have anything you'd like to share with the listeners?
I'm afraid to even open up any more topics for fear that you're going to want to talk about the Bearcat again.
Well, I'd like to talk about other mascots that might be love childs of different species.
How about let's talk. Well, really though, we're going to talk about mascots. What about Alabama, the Crimson Tide and the elephant?
I don't know. Google it. I don't know.
There's some weird stuff out there, man. Bearcats is a little bit weird, but there's some weird stuff out there.
Or the Stanford Cardinal.
And it's a tree.
There are some weird ones out there. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not touching any of those ones though. Actually, I'd love to make fun of Stanford. We could do a whole podcast on that.
You hate Stanford.
San Diego State and Stanford. Yes. I hate them. Well, that seems so harsh, but I really feel that way, so.
You really do though.
Oh gosh. Oh, they're wee beady eyes. Oh man. Why'd you get me all revved up?
I don't know. It's just I'm sitting here. I'm looking at the running back class of 2016, and there's weirdness out there in mascot land. Weirdness, bears and cats living together.
Mass hysteria. All right. Well, we are of course the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Make sure to go every morning, like I do, to CougarFan.com. to see what's happening in Cougar Nation. You go to iTunes as well. If you're listening to us through the web, go subscribe to us on iTunes Podcasts. We will be back next week talking about BYU Football Media Day, and hopefully with special guest SB Nation's own Bill Connolly, if he and I can line up the times and dates, we should be able to do that. But thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars! The past is gone.